The Young Architect Podcast proudly endorses Positively Portland Architecture Walking Tours. People visiting my hometown of Portland, Oregon often ask me if I have any recommendations of cool things to do. I always tell them to take a Positively Portland Architecture Tour. In 2013, architecture historian Eric Wheeler visited Portland, Oregon on a vacation and fell in love with Portland and its architecture. Eric went back to his home in Wisconsin, packed all his bags, moved to Portland, and now leads group tours around parts of the city sharing his passion for Portland's architecture. He's out there in the streets of Portland, Oregon, rain or shine, all year long, teaching everyone about history, design, and architecture. He's a very animated storyteller and tells the history of Portland architecture in a very fun and approachable way. The first time I met Eric, he showed up at my office to give an architecture history lesson to anyone who was interested. He had everyone cracking up while sharing his architecture lesson. Since that day, I decided Eric Wheeler would be my new best friend, and he certainly has been. If you're ever in Portland, Oregon, or know people who will be, I highly recommend Positively Portland Walking Architecture Tours as a great way to see the city. To learn more about Eric Wheeler's walking architecture tours, visit his website at positivelyportland.com.
This is the Young Architect Podcast, a podcast that is dedicated to empowering and helping the next generation of architects become more successful. Now, let's get into today's show with your host, Michael Rasika.
Welcome to the Young Architect Podcast. Today I have with me my good friend, Jared Smith. Thanks for being here, Jared.
Thank you.
So Jared and I became friends on the internet. It was, I feel like it wasn't long, maybe a couple months after I started Young Architect, I started getting, there's no secret that I'm obsessed with analytics and data. And so I started noticing I was getting traffic coming in from another website. And as I drilled down, I ended up finding Jared's blog. And at that time it was Registered Architect.
Yep.
And you had written a couple articles about the architect exam and started linking to my site as a resource. And, you know, I reached out to you. I read on your blog that you had gone to New York Tech, where I had also graduated. And I graduated in 2007. What year did you graduate?
2007. I graduated in 2008.
Yeah. So we were there kind of at the same time, but I was in Old Westbury and you were in Manhattan.
Yep.
Yeah.
In Manhattan.
And we never crossed paths in school, but it was kind of interesting to like suddenly make this friendship on the internet. And so you and I have kind of kept in touch, and I've written articles for your site. You've written them for mine, and it's been an honor to get to know you over the past couple of years. Yeah, thanks for taking the time to sit down and chat with me today.
Oh, no problem. It's a pleasure to be on.
So you've listened to the podcast before. I really like to hear how people got to where they're at today. So maybe you could kind of give us an overview of how you got into architecture.
Okay. Basically, I was born and raised in the South Bronx. That's where my parents, me and my brother were. And we kind of grew up with, and we were big, me and my brother, on Legos, Technic, Erector sets. Every Christmas, we were ecstatic to get the newest huge Lego set that we could get so we could try to put it together and do all of that. And I think that was kind of the starting point. My brother and I, we would disassemble old appliances and electronics, trying to fix them, just try to see the parts and kind of try to put them back together. We kind of ended up doing that for a large period of time, and what kind of led into me kind of being very technological with different things and using my hands to build things, which I like to do. And from there, we had a combo between private and public school, but I never really went to a technical school. It was more so kind of just where we were. And we kind of moved around a little bit once from the Bronx. And then from there, we moved into Westchester, into Yonkers. And both of my parents were educators in New York City public school system. So I really didn't have any bloodline of architecture or construction other than my great uncle that was an electrician. I just kind of knew I wanted to be an architect from that point when I found out what an architect was, especially during high school. I was full-fledged going to architecture school, and I knew I wanted to do that right off the bat. And my parents have said that they knew that I was going to do that, and I was really kind of headstrong on doing it. I ended up, like you said, at New York Institute of Technology. I was exclusively in the Manhattan campus. I think I commuted to Long Island. I think I went there one time before I enrolled, and I went there one time when I graduated. So I didn't do anything in Long Island whatsoever. So all in the Manhattan campus on 160th Street.
I was the opposite. I pretty much did everything in Old Westbury, except I failed the writing for architects class, which is kind of funny. I failed the writing for architects class. And so I had like a bad falling out with that whoever was teaching that class. And so I ended up coming into Manhattan just for that class.
Just for that one class.
And
okay.
I ended up getting an A.
Yeah. That's funny. But yeah, I got my bachelor's of architecture there. And from there, it was the slope of the economy going down at that point. So I really, you know, kind of jobs were kind of drying up. And it was getting kind of tough to be able to find any work once I got graduated. My internship that I had during college kind of fell through. They didn't have any openings and they were actually laying people off. So it really didn't work out that I was going to be able to stay there. But from there, I actually got together with my father. He was actually looking and trying to help me to find something. And he found a position that was right up the block from where I lived. And sure enough, I went for an interview and it was a small restoration firm and I got the job and just, you can't be beat. I could see the office from my upstairs window. So it was a great commute. And I was there for a good amount of time. I think it was about 6 years working on different restoration type work down in the city and in Westchester also. More so like masonry, brickwork and like terracotta work, some historic buildings. So I kind of got my feet wet doing that type of work. I can say it was a great starting point professionally, but I just got to the point where my professional development was getting a little bit stifled. Mm-hmm. So I figured it was time for me to move on. And at that point, I had completed my exams, my AREs, which I'll touch on in a minute. I figured it was time for me to go ahead and move on from there. And currently, I'm at a globally recognized firm as a project architect in Midtown, Manhattan. On the evenings and weekends, I run Architect Owl, which is my newer blog from the older one that you mentioned, which houses all of my blog stuff, as well as my business, which is photography and like other collaborations and stuff that I work on. And it's essentially an eye into my world. I'm a tenacious New Yorker by nature, born and raised. I can't help it with Christian beliefs, trying to keep positive in this extremely negative world. It's tough, but that's pretty much what I'm up to, where I'm at, and kind of what's happening with me.
Jared, I want to ask you about your photography. I think I've seen a lot of your photos and I think you do a fantastic job. How much photography are you actively doing? Are you shooting every day or?
It's when I'm doing projects, it's usually spaced out. Usually I kind of book up weekends sometimes. I usually try to limit things to one thing per weekend because some projects take longer than others. But generally, I like to shoot like street and like urban areas being in New York City. So I'm generally shooting probably every day or every other day with my camera or my phone or a combination of the two. It's probably, and at some points I have my camera with me like every day and I'm just bringing it with me and just snapping a couple shots wherever I am on construction sites or in the street, in the subway or wherever I am, just trying to, and it helps to hone my skills and just utilizing it because everyone's heard the term of 10,000 hours to be a professional, to perfect a craft. So I definitely can get better. I'm always my biggest advocate, but also my biggest critique comes from myself.
And what I love about your website, Architect Al, is it's not just architecture. You take your passion for photography and use that as a platform as well to share that. And I think it's just done really, really well.
Thank you.
So Jared, tell me about the exams. How was your experience?
Okay. Licensing. I know it's a tough one and a lot of people try to put it off, but it's something that I always tell people that they need to go ahead and dive in and do them as soon as they can. Life happens. And there's always going to be an excuse for you not to do your exams. So you might as well go ahead and take them. My licensing and when I started my AREs, I started with IDP when it was on paper. We had to submit it. It was a very arduous task. But I was in the process of doing IDP and we could concurrently take the exams here in New York. So I took that option and went ahead and started my AREs. And it actually, another one of the things people are afraid of is failing, which is not such a big thing as long as you learn from your experience and you actually keep going. I failed my first exam, which was CDS, Construction Documents and Services. However, I failed on the vignette based off of not really understanding the program fully and kind of just messing up how we're supposed to lay things out. Mm-hmm. and kind of got bummed on it. And I did take a little time to be able to recompose. But then I hopped back on to be able to take the exams thereafter. And I took 7 exams, 7 passes straight. I didn't fail again. Mm-hmm. And I kind of just, and then I was done. I spaced them out. I will say I spaced them out generously. I usually didn't take an exam until I was really ready, and which was usually about 3 months. Mm-hmm. 3 months for each exam, probably 4 months for structures to really make sure I understood it, since I was said to be one of the most difficult. However, I don't think it was. I took the Thaddeus online course, and it was probably the best thing I could have taken. It laid everything out, the theory you needed to know, and I actually enjoyed structures. It really wasn't that bad. Mm-hmm. And it was, I'm grateful to have gone through that and went ahead and got it done, because things just got complicated. Because in the process of me taking my exams is when I had my first and second child.
Wow.
So I took 3 exams and passed, 3 passes. Then I had my son. Then I took 2 more exams and then had my daughter.
Wow. Do you think having children in the middle of your exams helped give you inspiration to get this thing done and wrap it up and move on?
Very much. Very much so. Very much so. It was constant kind of reinforcing that I need to get it done. And this was for the betterment of not just me, but my entire family. And I was very happy, obviously, because after completing my exams, I had my son and my daughter, and I knew that I wanted to be able to dedicate time being their father. I didn't want to have to consume my time with the exams, which if you take in any exams, you know that it takes up a lot of time. Mm-hmm. With studying and the stuff you need to study stuff, and it just takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
In the beginning months of my children being young, I didn't get very much sleep at all. I would study very late night after they would go to sleep. I would study for a couple of hours, then they would be up and I would feed them their bottles and then continue studying and then pretty much get a couple of hours of sleep and then I would have to head to work. So that was pretty much the last year and a half or so of taking the exams.
One of the articles you wrote it's one of my favorites and I share it with people all the time is the don't spill the beans. And stop telling everyone you're taking these exams and just do it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That was one of those blog posts that kind of like came out of nowhere. Uh-huh. And I kind of wrote the whole thing in like one go. Because when I was taking my exams, it was definitely, I was at the small firm that I had mentioned. And it was one of those where I just felt it wasn't necessary for me to broadcast it. Because even though you're going to get some positivity and people that are going to help you or give you confidence and encourage you, there are always going to be people that are going to be negative and that are going to say that you can't do it or you're not going to do it or it's too difficult. Mm-hmm. Or whatever they have to say. And sometimes you don't necessarily want to open yourself up for that.
Yeah.
And that's purely why I was like, I'm not going to tell anybody. My parents knew at the time, my wife knew, my brother, and a couple of my close like architecture friends on Facebook knew that I was taking exams. And that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
I was not broadcasting it at all. No one at work knew. For the majority, some of my friends didn't know. It was just one of those where I wanted to be done and just be like, hey, yeah, I just got my license.
And kind of to add to your blog post, I recently wrote in an article that about the exams, how everyone, I think, should delete. If you're in the middle of these exams, I think you should delete your Facebook account. And it's never really deleted. It's just deactivated. Mm-hmm. And make a separate one. And if you're going to use Facebook, hang out in the NCARB Facebook group because there's this. You were a part of that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. There's such an active community of really supportive people that are all working on the same exact goal. And
exactly.
Everyone's just super supportive of each other.
I agree. That's definitely a good network. I definitely utilize that forum and as well as the old ARE forum before they closed it down. I definitely was in there using the vignette review time, having other people look at your vignettes and catch things that you really don't notice because you've looked at the screen for too long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's definitely one point that was a good thing.
Jared, I want to shift gears for a second, but I wanted to ask you about, you know, being an architect in this very competitive profession and raising a beautiful family.
Yes, it definitely has its difficulties because as the work-life balance is, mm-hmm. it's like a myth. It's very difficult, close to impossible, it seems at times, just to be able to have enough time. And architecture is known for having longer hours. Mm-hmm. And I myself have to make sure that I dedicate enough time to be able to have for the things that are important other than working in architecture and working at the office. It's just not going to be enough and not going to be nearly fulfilling enough for me to have this awesome architecture career, whether it's Architect Owl or elsewhere, and not have a happy family, a cohesive family that knows that I love them and am there for them to have experiences and do things with them. So it's tough. It's tough. Even now, more so as the kids have gotten a bit older, they're 3 and 4 now, 3 years old, 4 years old. My son is the oldest. And sometimes I get about an hour and a half of time in the morning. I take them to school. Okay. And in the evenings when I come home, I sometimes only get about an hour and then I have to put them to sleep. So it's not a lot of time when you think about it, you know, during the week that I really get to be with them. So I really dedicate to make sure I try to get home on time. I don't really hang out too late if I don't need to. My go-to events here or there down in the city at the AIA or various architecture-related continuing education type things. But I'm usually kind of headed home so that I can make sure that I can spend time with them. And I'm like a hustle and bustle New Yorker. I walk really fast. So if you catch me when I'm going to the train, like, I'm going to be a whiz. And I'm just zooming to Grand Central so that I can get out of the city. But that's the normal basis. It has its difficulties, but I just want to make sure my kids know that I'm there for them. And they know what I do.
Yeah.
And they're proud of what I do. And they always kind of asking me about stuff. So it's definitely a good thing.
Do you think your kids are into Legos and building and construction kind of stuff as much as you were when you were younger?
It's hard to say because they're still very young. Yeah. I have to wait till they get a little older and I can see. They definitely like Legos, but that might be spurred on by me buying Legos for them, quote unquote. And then we play with them together. But my son does like, he does like building and doing stuff. My daughter more so, but she's got the artistic creative side where she likes to draw. She's very detail oriented in drawing little things. And she'll sit and be completely surrounded by crayons, pencils, and pens and markers, and she'll do that. So I think I've kind of split things between the two of them where they have different things from me related to architecture, construction, and stuff. So we'll see. We'll see.
Jared, I want to ask you about NOMA. I know you're heavily involved with them. We haven't had a chance to chat about what they are and what they do on the podcast yet.
Nice. Okay.
And so, yeah, I was going to maybe ask you to speak about that. And then there was recently, like a month ago, there was this fantastic article about 20 distinguished minority architects, and you were prominently featured as one of them.
Yes. Yeah, that article was a surprise to me. I didn't even know. Someone else pointed it out, and I was like, why is my picture in the middle of this thing? But yeah, NOMA stands for National Organization of Minority Architects, which is a national level that I'm a part of. And my local chapter is the NYCOBA, which is a New York Coalition of Black Architects. And it's a longstanding organization, and pretty much their mission is to champion diversity within the design profession by promoting excellence, community engagement, and professional development of its members. And, you know, they have outreaches from minorities within the inner city, urban areas, and within New York City for our grade school, high schools, and even, you know, professionals that want to advance their career. It's a really good organization, and it's pretty known that it's not a lot of diversity in architecture, and they're trying to kind of break that up and let it be known that there are some great minority and people of color doing great things in architecture out here right now. Right now it's occurring, and it's, you know, people need to know that and take note to it, and that we're helping our own communities to do better and also bring up the next generation of designers and architects and even engineers from urban areas where they don't really know about architecture and engineering at all. It's kind of under the radar. So they're doing a really good job with that. And I try to give time when I can for the various different things for the chapter. But I really do like being a part of it and definitely will continue to be a part of it, if not, you know, sponsoring things and trying to help out whenever I can.
Yeah. What a fantastic committee.
Yes, very much, very much.
Is it related to AIA at all, or is it kind of its own thing?
It's really its own thing. They have their own convention. They have their own organizational meetings. We do happen to meet at the AIA Center for Architecture. So they do have a kind of an understanding between AIA. I know that. But it is its separate own entity. One thing I did want to chat about was just confidence. Architecture is a really kind of broad kind of profession where you can do many different things. And within the profession and whatever you're doing, it's definitely important to have confidence and unapologetic about who I am and moving forward and doing what I'm doing. I mean, you have to exude confidence and believe in yourself, even if it's small things. I'm not saying to be cocky or arrogant, but it definitely goes a long way.
Yeah.
No one knows everything, and we have to, you know, sometimes it's not the ability of what you know. It's, you know, having the ability to find the information that you need or find someone that does know. Mm-hmm. So you know, we don't have to be set in our ways and thinking that we have to know everything.
Yeah.
And definitely to bring to the point about mentors, you know, it's definitely one of those where you want to surround yourself with company that will help you. The company you keep, it will dictate your future. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be surrounded by people that are not really doing anything. They're not, you know, progressing in life, or they're not doing anything that you want to do. I always would say, I had a basketball analogy when I was younger with my brother. It was always two sets of people on the basketball court. It was the younger kids and it was the older guys that were playing. We would always say, you play with the best, then you get better. If you play among the people that you can easily beat, then you don't learn anything and you don't grow. You kind of have to, you know, put that in place and try to, you know, make sure you facilitate what goes on around you to see if it's benefiting you or it's harming you.
It's such a good point, too. I'm glad you brought up that part about confidence, too, because a couple of years after, even for the first couple of years after architecture school, I had pretty low confidence with all the stuff I didn't know in the office.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. as crazy as it sounds, it was actually through studying for the architect exam where I started to kind of put all the pieces together. And
I totally agree with you. I actually enjoyed studying for the architecture exam where I was like opening my eyes like, wow, okay, that's why that is this way.
Yeah.
Because, you know, reading kind of all of the information that you needed to, you kind of learned a good amount of information. You learned a lot.
And through that process of understanding and seeing, get that broad overview of what the business of architecture is, like that helped me gain a lot of confidence. Now I knew what the hell was going on in the office.
Exactly. Especially, I feel like one of the main ones was CDs and PPP, where you kind of knew how things were supposed to go together and kind of understood more so things of the nature of being in the office. And then there's some things where you kind of just had to learn it mm-hmm. as you went while you were there. But the exams definitely helped with that.
Totally.
Hey, if you're enjoying today's show, don't forget to visit youngarchitect.com for more podcasts, blog posts, and information to help you have a more successful architecture career.
All right, Jarrett. I got a couple of questions for you.
Okay.
Prepare yourself. Number one, do you have any advice for aspiring architects?
Yes. One of the things that I would say is periodically check your current work environment and compare it against what you thought or what you wanted out of your career. Sometimes you may be close to it or you may be far away from it, which may be fine, but you still need to assess it so that you can kind of see where you're going in your career. You might go astray and not really notice. And then you're kind of like, oh, well, when did I really do this? When I really want my career to go in this direction. And it's just like when you're designing a building, you have to refer back to the basis of design and ultimately the programmatic goal for your client. You have to do the same thing in your life. You have to design your life. No one else is going to do it for you. Mm-hmm. So if you kind of just go on the path that's presented, sometimes that might lead to an avenue that you really don't want to go.
I think sometimes too that we see these opportunities and take a job or a position mm-hmm. or something, and then fast forward a couple of years and you're suddenly spending 8 hours a day with all these people you don't like, or you're just not happy. You don't like the projects. You don't like the work.
Yep.
So that's a good one.
Yes. Yes.
So number two, what everyday thing are you better at than anyone else?
Tough one. Tough one. I don't know. My wife and my kids like the way I make oatmeal. I make some pretty good oatmeal. I don't know.
I think you're damn good with that camera, let's be honest.
Yeah, I'm my most biggest critique. I'm always telling myself, and some of my people, my friends, and even my photography buddies, they like, this came out great. And I'm like, no, but you can see the little corner over here. The lighting wasn't perfect. So, but I'm getting there. I'm getting there. I got to be more confident with my photography. I'm not picking at myself a little bit too much. But yeah, I definitely think I'm on the road to trying to get better there.
All right. Question three. What do you know today that you didn't know back then?
Probably don't take things personally. By nature, I'm very analytical mm-hmm. and it's just the way I am. But you know, whether it's clients or coworkers or contractors or whoever it is, a lot of time we are too much in our own head and it's for nothing. I even have to tell myself, relax, Jay, it's not that serious, and just to move on. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we take things personally too quickly, especially in the day and age of the keyboard warriors, where, you know, people kind of will say and do craziness online, which really doesn't mean anything. It's no sense in bringing urgency to things that are not important and don't mean anything in your own personal life.
So what's one book that changed everything for you?
Oh, man. One book I just finished and actually was a really good book was The Alchemist.
Oh, yeah.
I really liked that book. It's for just kind of summarized for people that haven't read it. It's a story of a young boy. He's making a journey to find his destiny or his calling in life. And he has some twists involved, some risks he must take. And then he has regrets of choices that he makes, but then later turn out to be foundational experiences that he needed for future tasks. And doesn't that sound a lot like a lot of people right now? And it was like, you know, kind of a classic notion of this could be attached to anybody. And one part of it was it teaches you to listen to your heart and your gut sometimes and dream big, but also get out there and work for it. You can't just dream and not do anything. We will pass many people that dream but never actually strive to attain any part of that dream. And bad things are going to happen, but we have to pick up and keep going. And my biggest outcome from that book was striving for making your own path and killing self-doubt, as well as the many that surround you that will try to put you down or ridicule you for your dreams, but it's part of your necessary journey. We all are trying to get somewhere, and we could definitely relate to any task, any profession for that matter, that someone is in trying to figure out what they want to do in life, and whether it's one thing or five things or just periodic changes in their life. It was definitely a great book.
Yeah, it sounds like a great book for architects too.
Yeah, it was. And it completely unrelated to architecture, but however you could link it to architecture immediately when you see all of the things he's doing, the choices he's presented and some things he regrets and then actually end up being a good thing because then he's like, he remembers that he did this before and it's helping him in his current task. So it was definitely a worthwhile book. I'll probably read it a few more times just to, because it's one of those books where when you read it the first time, you'll read it one way, but then you'll read it again and you'll notice other things that you didn't pick up the first time.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm going to check it out.
Definitely.
So what's one favorite resource, product, or gadget that you just can't live without?
I would have to say, I know typically you don't want people to say their phone or their computer, in which even though I have it periodically, it's something that I'm definitely not going to be something that I have to have. However, I do keep my iPod Touch, so it's more so about music. Okay. I love listening to music. Between that and my camera, which my camera stays in my hand a lot also, but my music kind of comes with me wherever I go also. I've always been a fan of music and instruments. I played the saxophone when I was younger. I couldn't do anything with it now, but I liked it then. And hip hop, reggae, rock, electronica is a lot of music that I listen to. And I like classical music also, which during the Aries, I was straight classical. That was the only thing I listened to. I loved it. And it kind of, I feel like it spurred me on because I was just listening to different classical music. Mm-hmm. It helped me focus on what I was doing. And even when I work, I listen to music. When I shoot photography, I'm out kind of in the streets. I always have it with me. So it kind of gives me a calm and focus. So I kind of have to have my music.
Cool. So you're carrying an iPod Touch and a cell phone in your pocket?
I usually do. My thing when I originally got into having an iPhone and going the avenue with Apple was I didn't want to have everything in one place.
Yeah.
And then you lose it and then you lose everything.
Absolutely.
So I've always done that. I don't have any music on my phone and I don't have anything else on my iPod except music. So my podcast and like work related apps and stuff like that are all on my phone. And then all my music and like audiobooks and stuff like that are all on my iPod Touch.
Yeah. I kind of do the same thing sometimes. I have a little iPod mini that I listen to, but I get annoyed sometimes when I get a phone call in the middle of listening to something. So
this is true. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Nice. I always separate it. I never put it together. And sometimes I listen to iHeart on my phone, iHeart Radio, but that's about it. I never switched on to putting any of my music on there.
So what's your best time-saving trick?
I'm going to leave this one open because me with my kids and work and everything, I don't know. I'm still searching for that best time-saving trick because my days kind of split up. So I kind of try to regulate myself and limit what I do and focus on what task I have in front of me and try to just go hard at whatever that is for that time period that I've allotted. And then when that time period's up, then I know that I have to move on to something else. So that's probably my best time saving trick, just so that I can get what I need to get done in a given day or week, is to make sure that I specifically make sure I pinpoint, you know, what I need to do, how much time do I have to do it, and work diligently at it during that time period.
Jared, what's the best way for someone listening to connect with you and Noma and all the stuff that you're actively working on?
You can go to architectowl.com, where it has contact info to all my stuff. Architect spelled out, owl like the animal, owl.com. And I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at Architect Owl. And then my email is on the website if you want to contact me from there. Man, that's pretty much where I live.
And I'll have links to all of Jared's social media and website stuff in our show notes for this episode.
Nice. Great.
Yeah, I want to thank you for taking the time to sit down and chat today. It's been a pleasure to getting to know you over the past couple of years. And I've been
definitely
super excited. I think you're a fantastic writer. And I love sharing the content you've created about the exam with people I come across along the way.
Definitely. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it, because it needs to be. And this is a great podcast for people to kind of hear what other people are doing in the architecture realm. Thank you.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening. Have a great rest of your day. Take care.
You've been listening to the Young Architect Podcast. If you enjoyed today's show, be sure to leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. Until next time, keep up the great work, everyone.